Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, September 10th. We begin at the Decatur Herald and Review with an article written by Allison Petty, who's a staff writer. Many express interest in serving on City Council. The Decatur City Council will meet again in closed session next week to continue mulling who will be appointed to join its ranks. Council members will choose from among 20 applicants for the position that opened when Julie Moore Wolf was appointed mayor August 17th. Moore Wolf left her council seat to fill the vacancy created by Mike McElroy's death in July. Moore Wolf said Wednesday that the council would meet at 5:30 p.m. Monday to continue the discussion. They received submitted materials August 31st and met again Tuesday to begin reviewing their individual top choices. With so many great people to look at, that's probably the biggest challenge, Moore Wolf said, adding, "It's a good thing that so many people are excited about this. How bad would it be if nobody wanted to do it?" The council plans to keep names of the applicants private. "Some on council wanted this to be a very public process. The majority of us were not comfortable with that," she said. "However, applicants are free to be as open as they like," she said. Several made themselves known during the public comments portion of Tuesday's council meeting. One familiar face was Derek Thaxton, who previously sought a seat on the council in the 2013 and 2015 elections. Bob Renton, a resident of the South Shores area, also asked the council to consider him for the post. Mike Smith expressed his support for G.E. Livingston, who lost to McElroy in the April mayoral election with 36% of the vote. Livingston, who is president and CEO of Robertson Charter School, confirmed to the Herald and Review that he applied for the open council spot. One request was more broad. Decatur Township Clerk Ada Owens asked the council to consider appointing an African American. All but one of the six elected council members are white. Referring to earlier comments by City Manager Tim Gleason that former council members had expressed interest, Owen said she was grateful for their service but thought they should enjoy their retirement. "We must believe their shoes can be filled, because if we don't, we are in big trouble," she said. Under state law, the council has until October 16th to appoint someone. "I think we've got some folks with definite ideas, and we've got great people who have offered to serve," Moore Wolf said. "It's a pretty important decision, so we're not going to rush it." In an article written by Ryan Boyles, also a staff writer for the Decatur Herald and Review, County Board Wind Turbine Vote Expected. The long-discussed wind farm project in Macon County is set for a final decision. The Macon County Board meets at 6 p.m. tonight, that's Thursday, with the agenda featuring a plan that would build 140 wind turbines and other components of a wind farm in the northern part of the county. County committees held earlier this summer have seen dozens of supporters and opponents spend hours at the usually quiet meetings going over their thoughts and concerns with the wind farm proposal. It would allow Twin Forks Wind Farm, a subsidiary of E.ON, the American unit of Germany's largest utility company, to construct and operate up to 140 wind turbines near Moroa and Warrensburg. Under the special use permit, the wind farms will operate in Macon County for 30 years, with an estimated $46 million in new tax revenue generated over the life of the project, and an estimated $32.5 million of it going toward Macon County school districts, specifically Moroa Forsyth and Warrensburg Latham. Macon County would receive $6.1 million, while the Austin, Moroa, Illini, and Hickory Point townships would split the remaining $7.8 million. Participating landowners are estimated to collectively be paid $1 to $2 million per year for leases. Construction of the turbines is expected to create 140 prevailing wage construction jobs in the area for 6 to 12 months, while 10 Local full-time jobs will be created to service the equipment during the length of the project. A running theme throughout the process, which first came to light about 2008, has been whether the financial positives outweigh the perceived negatives related to wind turbines in the community. Opponents opposed to the farm have raised concerns about the noise created by turbines, the impact of flicker effect created by turbines during daylight, the environmental cost to livestock and birds, and the impact on property values. They were also critical of what they believed was a rushed process in August. Officials from E.ON have attempted to answer some of the concerns during public hearings, as well as in studies provided in their application. The proposal was recommended by the Zoning Board of Appeals and unanimously passed by the county's Environmental, Education, Health, and Welfare Committee, which both met in mid-August. Our next article comes from Shelbyville and was written by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review. Union protests Shelby County contract negotiations. Midway through the monthly Shelby County Board meeting Wednesday morning, more than a dozen Shelby County employees entered the courtroom hosting the meeting and stood silently for more than 10 minutes before exiting. The employees, members of American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council 31, are currently in contract negotiations with the board. Those negotiations came to a halt earlier this month when the board negotiating team asked for a federal mediator. Debbie Dunaway, union local president and county assessor's office employee, said employees were shocked by the request. "We couldn't believe it," she said. "We've had such a good relationship over 30 years between the county and the union that it was unbelievable to us that they would ask for mediation." AFSCME staff member Dave Beck said he didn't understand what had disrupted negotiations. "In the year and a half I've been working with this group of employees, I've been struck by how positive this group feels about the county. The relationships the employees have with the county and administration is one of the best I've seen," he said. Beck said the county's lead negotiator had insulted county employees. He belittled them. He said their work didn't compare to county work in Macon County. They feel hurt and disrespected. Shelby County and the employee union have a history of cordial relationships. AFSCME last protested at an informational picket in 1994, and a mediator has never been required for previous contracts. Dunaway said there was a new tone in contract negotiations when they began earlier this summer. "We've always tried to be able to work things out," she said. "This time we had the same sort of proposal we have had in the past, but there was very different feeling back from the county. The county is in good financial shape. They have a surplus, and we aren't asking for very much. I don't understand why they've chosen not to negotiate." County board members did not respond to comments from Beck, who said he was frustrated by the stalemate. Our next article was written by Emily Steele, an H&R staff writer. West Nile virus perks up in dry weather. The number of mosquitoes carrying the West Nile virus has spiked in recent weeks, and health officials are reminding people to remain vigilant. The drier the weather is, the higher the risk is for contracting the virus. "This is the time of year that we see the risk of it going over to humans increases just because it's more plentiful," said Jackie Evans Moser, director of the Macon Mosquito Abatement District. The district has 78 confirmed batches of mosquitoes carrying the virus out of 625 collected since testing began in the spring. It's typical for human cases to peak this time of year when it's hot and dry, allowing the virus to replicate faster. "The battle against mosquitoes is not over yet, even though it's dry out there," Evans Moser said. "There have been 10 human cases of the virus and 3 deaths in Illinois so far this year, according to the Department of Public Health. None of those have been in Macon or any of its surrounding counties." Birds carrying the virus can be attracted to yards with bird baths and other water sources. Mosquitoes will feed off the sick birds and stay in the area, increasing the risk for human transmission. Residents that are harboring any unmaintained or unkempt pools, kiddie pools, ornamental ponds this time of year are inviting the Culex mosquito into their yard, Evans Moser said. You can't believe how many people still have pools in their yard sitting there with 3 inches of water in this heat. Mild cases of West Nile infections may cause a fever or headache 3 to 14 days after being bitten, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. Severe infections can lead to a high fever with head and body aches, disorientation, tremors, convulsions, and even paralysis or death. Their risk of contracting West Nile virus is tied directly to their level of protection, Evans Moser said. The risk for being bitten by a mosquito carrying the virus decreases as the days shorten. By the end of October, the risk decreases and the first hard frost will kill the mosquitoes. Our next article was written by Ryan Voiles, and this is from Mount Zion. Mount Zion approves splash pad design study. The village of Mount Zion will contract with Chastain and Associates for the design and engineering of the proposed splash pad in Fletcher Park. The village board approved a bid during its Tuesday night meeting, though there was some questions about the cost and whether it was moving ahead too quickly. The Chastain and Associates bid, estimated at $36,500, was chosen over the 5 other proposals received by the village for the design and engineering phase of the splash pad, with other bids ranging from $10,000 to $59,500. Village Administrator Julie Miller recommended the board consider the Chastain or other $38,500 from the MSA Professional Services, as both have had prior experience and knowledge with splash pads and include both the design and engineering requirement of the proposal, something lacking in the cheapest bid. Aside from its cost, Chastain and Associates had the benefit of having previously worked in the Decatur area. Aside from its cost, Chastain and Associates had the benefit of having previously worked in the Decatur area on the Hess Park improvements, the Scoville Zoo water feature, and the Fairview Park swimming pool's spray pool addition. While all the board members said they were supportive, Trustee Ron Johnson voted against the proposal and suggested that perhaps the board should wait until it has more money on hand to dedicate for the project. I don't see anything bad about going slow, he said. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here. The cost of the engineering work, along with the rest of the project, will be covered through donations, grants, and corporate sponsors. So far, the village's Parks and Recreation has raised $23,314 for the project, with another large fundraiser set for next February. The cost of the design and engineering work will come out of the village's general fund, though officials noted that noted that donations have gone as well. That is also where the donations have gone as well. Whoosh. Though the total amount has not been raised, Miller recommended the village move forward with the project, as grant money will be more readily available with the design firm in place. In addition, Miller said having a shovel-ready project would help it secure corporate donations. In other business, the board unanimously approved the appointment of Shane Mendenhall to fill the vacancy left by the departure of Rick Bright. The Mount Zion native is a partner at the law firm of Bolin Robinson and Ellis, LLP in Decatur, and said he was looking for a way to get back to his community. I'm now looking at news stories to be found in the Tribune. This may be a bit dated, but it may still be news to you. It is to me. This is from September 8th. City Council discusses plans to address sewer issues. The Decatur City Council on Monday heard details of plans to address issues related to the 599 miles of sewer in the city, plans that will be costly and extensive, but much less so in the short term than would have been originally required. City Attorney John Robinson presented components of a proposed administrative compliance order between the City of Decatur and United States Environmental Protection Agency during Monday's regularly scheduled Decatur City Council meeting. The order comes following several years of discussion between the city and the EPA over sanitary sewer system backups throughout the community, with originally proposed EPA court action requiring the city to fix the entire system narrowed to a willingness by the EPA to allow for the addressing of priority areas through a less intensive administrative process in the more immediate future. Council members are expected to vote on the order and authorization for what will be a detailed study of Decatur's sanitary sewer system at a future council meeting. Future required plans will be required to provide, among other things, a clear assessment of each targeted area, including mapping, an acceptable description of the capacity of each targeted area, and alternative solutions to identified capacity issues, alternative solutions for problems identified in the assessment, with recommendations to eliminate sewer overflows and property backups, acceptable management, operations, and maintenance practices for the system. During EPA negotiations, the city was able to show that it already had taken proactive steps to address problems through the creation of both a sanitary sewer master plan and a stormwater sewer master plan, which is believed to have been beneficial. Our next article, city announces three new appointments. The City of Decatur is excited to announce the appointment of three individuals with more than 60 years of combined experience in the areas of human resources, IT, and mass transit to fill recently vacated positions with the city. Decatur native Penny Frank has been appointed to the position of Human Resources Manager after having served more than 11 years as Personnel Specialist for the City of Decatur. Ms. Frank has more than 20 years of human resources experience and is a member and past president for the Decatur Area Society for Human Resources Management, SHRM. SHRM. She is a 1983 graduate of Eisenhower High School and a 1987 graduate of Millikan University, and is also certified as a professional in human resources and SHRM certified professional. New MIS manager James E. Jim Edwards comes to the city from his most recent role as IT Manager 1 for Archer Daniels Midland Company in Decatur. His career also includes a term as Executive Director of IT for Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City from 2011 to 2014, and as Director of Information Systems for Decatur Memorial Hospital, 1993 to 2011. Mr. Edwards successfully managed staff in IT and telecommunications for more than 21 years and led multiple system replacement initiatives for both DMH and Gibson Area Hospital during his career, having maintained multi-million dollar capital and operational budgets at 98% accuracy and reduced overhead through technology and process reengineering. His background has also included a strong focus on setting and improving customer service standards. John Williams has been appointed the new Mass Transit Administrator for the Decatur Public Transit System after serving nearly 10 years with the Greater Peoria Mass Transit District as its Director of Special Services. During his time in Peoria, Mr. Williams was responsible for contract and project management and for ADA compliance and monitoring for transit programs and activities. He is a Community Transit Association of America Certified Community Transit Manager, and his career has been highlighted by his work in addressing issues related to accessible transportation. John is looking forward to the challenge of filling what he describes as the big shoes left by former Mass Transit Administrator Paul McChancy, with a goal of making the Decatur Public Transit System the best small urban transit system in the state of Illinois. Continuing in the Tribune, an article about Fido Scurry in Fairview Park, September 12th. Let's see, that's the day after tomorrow, so Saturday. The 15th annual Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation's Fido Scurry will be held Saturday, September 12th. It will be held at Fairview Park Pavilion No. 1. There will be a 5K or 1 mile run or walk with or without a pet participant. The event will begin with a Yappy Hour, which includes registration and t-shirt pickup beginning at 8 a.m. An ecumenical blessing of the animals will be held at 8:30 a.m. by Father Joe Malloy. The pet parade and costume contest will begin at 8:40. The theme for the costume contest is Back to School. The dog jog, 5K or 1 mile run or walk, will begin at 9 a.m., followed by the Lap Up, which will feature complimentary refreshments, treats and door prizes for pets and persons, canine demonstrations, doggy games, dog-filled retrieval demonstrations, balloon animals, and face painting. Gee, just an aside from me, who wants to miss this? If the weather is remotely nice, which I think it's supposed to be, what a fun morning in the park. Honorary chairpersons for Fido Scurry will be Megan Braheny Bennett with her dog Gracie and John Pranschke. Junior honorary co-chairperson will be Max Atkinson, 13, and Sam Atkinson, 11, with rescue dogs Rosie and Jip. Prizes for overall run winners and medals for runners in several categories with and without pet partners will be awarded. Cost for the run is $25 per person, which includes one t-shirt and one bandana. Cost for the walk is $10 per person or $20 per family, which includes one bandana. Additional t-shirts and bandanas may be purchased for $15 per t-shirt or $5 per bandana. The t-shirts and bandanas were designed by the late Decatur artist, sculptor Larry Weatherholt. T-shirts and bandanas may be included in advance, may be purchased in advance at Millie and Beau's Barkery in Northgate Pet Plaza. If someone would like to support the Fido Scurry but doesn't want to be in the run or the walk, there is an option of sponsoring a student to run in the 5K 1 mile race by contributing the $25 registration fee. Registration forms may be picked up at any veterinarian's office, Decatur Indoor Sports Center, Dale's Lakes, South Lake Pharmacy, and Millie and Beau's Dog Barkery. The Decatur Park District and Decatur Running Club co-sponsor Fido Scurry with the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation. The Decatur Running Club sets up and administers the races. All proceeds from Fido Scurry will help furnish needed care and treatment for the homeless and stray animals of the community, which are in the care of the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center, and help increase adoptions of these shelter animals, and will help the future development of Fido Fields Dog Park in Fairview Park and the new Fido Fields East Dog Park in Nelson Park. For additional information, call 423-7387 or 454-8212 or 423-8212. One more time, those numbers, 423-7387 or 454-8212 or 423-8212. Another announcement of something coming up that may be of importance to you. Properties will be sold at public auction September 22nd. Macon County, as trustee, has completed its tax deeds processings on properties that were delinquent for 2011 and prior real estate taxes. Macon County, as trustee, will now offer for sale approximately 728 properties at a public auction at the Richland Community College Schilling Education Center, 1 College Park Road in Decatur, at 6 p.m. on September 22nd. Bidding will start at $600 per item. Bidders are encouraged to attend the auction sale. While pre-written bids are acceptable, the auction department of the Macon County Tax Agent's Office, Post Office Box 96 in Edwardsville, 62025, must receive them by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, September 15th. Full payment is required with all pre-written bids. The highest written bid received will be announced before the auctioneer opens the oral biddings on the evening of September 22nd. Each item will sell to the highest bidder. The sale of these lots should be a major benefit to both the taxing districts and neighboring property owners. The sale will place the properties into the hands of individuals who have an interest in owning them. Macon County, as trustee, hopes that these new owners will both maintain the property and keep the real estate taxes paid. By eliminating abandoned properties, the appearance of the neighborhoods should improve and the value of adjoining properties should increase. Sale catalogs are now available at the Macon County Treasurer's Office in Decatur or online at www.iltaxsale, that's iltaxsale.com. For further information, contact the Auction Sale Department of the Macon County Tax Agent's Office at 1-800-248-2850. Or 618-656-5744, or visit again www.iltaxsale, all one big jumble word, .com. We're out of time for this first half hour that we've been reading news from both the Tribune and the Decatur Herald and Review for Thursday, September 10th. We're going to take a quick break. Hope you will stick around with me if you're unable to do so. Have a great day, and the rest of you hang tight. We'll be right back.